there was a feeling amongst everyone there that that a page had been turned, and that something, we were in a new moment that we were going to all have to find out what it meant.
Ultimately, though, while he was found guilty of each of those 16 shots, while Jason Van Dyke was found guilty of second-degree murder, his sentence.
So months later, in January of this year, the two things happened days apart. First, there was a conspiracy trial for the other officers on the scene, where they were charged with conspiring to cover up this murder. All of them were acquitted. The next day, Van Dyke was sentenced, and the judge, Judge Gaughan, decided not to consider the 16 counts of aggravated battery, one for each shot, only consider the second-degree murder, and gave him 6.5 years, eligible for release in 3 years. And the, you know, we talked to the jurors who felt betrayed. I mean, they went in there. So each count of aggravated battery carries 6 to 30 years per count. They thought that they were giving a verdict that was going to mean Van Dyke was going to jail for the rest of his life. And instead, it was shortened to you know, less time than. I mean, there are hundreds of people in Cook County Jail right now awaiting trial for more than 3 years because they can't afford the $500 it would take to make bail.
And so what do you think is the lesson today as the activists continue in the streets of Chicago, and what this means for the country as Showtime broadcasts your documentary?
I mean, there's two things that cut through this for me. The first is, you know, the scale, the massive scale of the cover-up. I mean, this is not a scandal. This is not aberrant behavior. This isn't three people in a room deciding that they're going to clear this one bad officer. This is every institution in the city being complicit in this in some way or another, in small ways or large ways. The other lesson is that for all of the strengths of this machine, it broke down. That wall of silence was shattered in this case. And it was shattered because dozens of people at crucial moments came forward and took brave stands and broke it, and also because of the sustained attention and pressure of movements. I mean, this is a story arc that's 4 years long. People stayed on this. They stayed in the street. They stayed active, and they kept pushing this. And so that I'm in awe of the people of Chicago and of the journalists and the social movements there who maintained the pressure throughout and managed to win victories that have been elusive in every other city in this country.
Rick Rowley, director of the new documentary 16 Shots. It just premiered and is available on Showtime. Rick was nominated for an Academy Award for the film Dirty Wars. And that does it for our show. Congratulations to Democracy Now!'s general manager Julie Crosby and her partner Rebecca Wallach on the birth of their baby, Ryan Joseph Crosby Wallach. Welcome to the world. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Charina Nadura, Tamaria Studio, and Libby Rainey. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Meet me on the mountain.
KBOO wants you to meet us where the music's at.
You can see awesome live bands like Fruition.
That's right. KBOO wants to send you to a concert this summer.
Just enter the KBOO Summer Music Raffle, where three lucky winners will choose in order from three awesome events.
You could win 2 3-day passes to the Northwest String Summit, July 19th to the 21st.
A pair of Sunday tickets to Pickathon, August 4th.
A pair of tickets to Lord Huron and Shaky Graves at the Oregon Zoo, August 12th.
Tickets are just $5, and if you buy 4, you get an extra raffle chance for free.
Enter at kboo.fm/give, or you can buy tickets in person at Music Millennium or Grendel's Coffee.
Deadline to enter is July 7th. See kboo.fm/summermusicraffle for full rules and details.
Enter now for your chance to win.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday at 4:30 p.m.
The time is 5:04, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Coming up next is the evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Organ Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting Jim James of My Morning Jacket, and the Claypool Lennon Delirium, featuring Les Claypool and Sean Lennon. Thursday, June 27th. All ages are welcome. Tickets and more information can be found online at zooconcerts.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
An unnaturally large number of gray whales are dying and washing ashore.
And in international news, Morsi, the deposed president of Egypt, died suddenly during his courtroom testimony. As of today, there have been 17 mass shootings in the U.S. for the month of June. That is an average of exactly one per day. That brings the death toll this month to 16, with 62 injured.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 17, 2019. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The Portland Pride Parade Festival took place over the weekend, with an estimated 45,000 people attending the parade on Sunday to celebrate the LGBTQ community. Parade goers were delighted to see a 10-year-old drag queen who goes by the name Sparkles in attendance. However, Sparkles almost missed the parade this year after receiving online backlash after performing at an all-ages drag event. Their family was fearful for their safety. When news spread that Sparkles may have to miss Pride because of the hateful comments online, the Portland Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence stepped in to help. When asked about performing in drag, Sparkles responded, quote, "It brings me a smile, and a lot of other people smile. I need to do this."
The Supreme Court will not hear an appeal from the owners of an Oregon bakery that was fined for refusing service to a lesbian couple in 2012. Justices of the Supreme Court ordered the case to be returned to lower courts in Oregon for further consideration. Owners of the bakery Sweet Cakes by Melissa claimed that by serving the couple, they would be violating their religious principles on the grounds of their sexual orientation. Previously, lower courts in Oregon ruled against the bakery owners, stating they violated an Oregon law barring discrimination by refusing services to the couple. The bakery has since gone out of business. This isn't the first time the Supreme Court has declined to hear a religious freedom case of the likes, most recently in a similar case concerning a Colorado baker. The court's decision leaves a murky legal precedent and unsolved question regarding whether or not businesses may discriminate against same-sex couples on religious grounds.
Yet another gray whale is washed ashore near Warrenton. It's the sixth of its kind to be beached in the state since January. All of the whales have been female. Gray whales have been washing ashore in unprecedented numbers so far in 2019, with 73 dead gray whales washing up on the coasts of California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and Canada in the last 6 months. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has launched an investigation into the deaths. These numbers are staggering compared to years past. A total of 25 whales were found washed ashore on the West Coast in all of 2018. Emaciated whales tend to sink, so the numbers that wash up only represent a fraction of the true number of dying whales. Some estimate that the 73 beached whales from the past 6 months are only 10% of the amount actually deceased. It's not yet clear why so many whales are dying, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports that it may be due to a lack of nutrition. NOAA is also asking waterfront homeowners to allow their land for use for the decomposition of dead gray whales. This is partly due to the sheer number of carcasses, but also to study and observe the decomposition process and its effect on the environment and local wildlife.
Oregon is set to become the second state to adopt a progressive climate change policy that would lower the greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. The cap and trade program is being described as the United States' most progressive climate policy, as it goes further than just cutting emissions. If passed into law, it will also prioritize investing in low-income communities, and it will reshape the state economy and infrastructure to prepare for more intense weather patterns as climate change progresses.
Multiple press reports in April have outlined the state of Oregon's lack of planning for an oil spill or accident involving petrochemicals. The Bend Bulletin newspaper reported that Zenith Oil has so far failed to hold adequate safety tests on the trains carrying Bakken oil through some of the state's most populated areas. Zenith was able to avoid conducting safety tests, and state officials failed to force them to do so. Today, the Oregon House of Representatives passed a bill creating new fees on oil train cars to pay for spill prevention and planning in the state. It now heads to the Senate for debate. If passed, the fees would go to the state fire marshal and the state Department of Environmental Quality. The bill would require train operators to carry more insurance when operating the trains to help pay for spill cleanup. The fees, which would go into effect January 1st of 2020, would raise about $1 million every 2 years before expiring in 2027.
The bodies of a missing Salem woman and her son were found in a remote and wooded area in Yamhill County over the weekend. Police had been searching for Carissa Fretwell and her three-year-old son Billy since May 17th. An autopsy found Carissa died of a gunshot wound to the head, and her death has been ruled a homicide. Billy's manner of death has not yet been determined. Billy's father, Michael John Wolfe, has been arrested in connection with the deaths and was charged with aggravated murder and kidnapping, but has denied involvement.
A 32-year-old disabled man was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer in a Costco store on Friday night in Corona, California. His parents were also shot and remain in intensive care. The officer claims that he was shopping with his family when he was attacked while holding his young child. However, according to a family member, the shooting victim, Kenneth French, lived with his parents, had the mental capacity of a teenager, and was nonverbal as a result of an intellectual disability. This and multiple witness accounts contradict the officer's claim that Kenneth provoked him. Police have yet to release the name of the off-duty officer who sustained minor injuries from the event and have not yet made any arrests in the case. The officer's child was unharmed.
A Republican attempt to redraw voting lines in Virginia has been shut down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The court today ruled in favor of Democrats, deciding the Republican-led Virginia House of Delegates did not have the legal right to challenge a lower court's ruling finding the district maps they had drawn were a form of unconstitutional gerrymandering. Had the court ruled in favor of the Republican challenge, it would have significantly improved the Republicans' chances of holding on to the House of Delegates in future elections.
Well, Portland Juneteenth was celebrated last weekend, but if you missed it, you're going to have another chance to observe this key piece of American history. Beyond Black is hosting Juneteenth this Wednesday at Vance Park in Gresham. Here to talk about it live are organizers Latasha Carter and Jermaine Flintroy. Did I pronounce that correctly, Jermaine?
Yes, you did.
Flintroy, okay. Great to have you here today. Thank you so much for being part of the cast today.
Thank you for having us.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Beyond Black, the Community Development Corporation. What exactly does Beyond Black do?
Beyond Black is a new community development corporation out in East County. What we also do, we have a youth and family service where we take homeless, at-risk, and underserved kids, homeless kids, and we give them gym time. We do summer camps throughout and spring break camps. We also have a wellness and nutrition where we do farmers market cart where we take fresh produce to the low-income families in the departments out in East County. We also have a public safety where we have like police officers come to our gym and make sure they have a relationship with the kids that's in the neighborhood, right? We try to make sure that they have that relationship so therefore either our kids can learn what community policing is about and also give an outlook of what is safety. We also do economic development, which is where the farmer's market cart, eventually a person in the community will be able to own one of these farmer's market cart and build their own business.
It sounds like you are busy.
Yes.
That's a whole bunch right there. So on top of all this, you have a Juneteenth celebration coming up very shortly. Can you tell us a little bit about the background of Juneteenth and what it commemorates?
Well, Juneteenth is obviously known as one of the oldest celebrations that has happened in the black community. As they abolished slavery, we started to say, yes, let's build something out in East County to give our people opportunity necessary to feel welcome, to feel safe, and participate and make that safe relationship with like the city of Gresham. So we started to put our team together and show how the black community necessarily celebrate Juneteenth as it started in Texas. As a lot of us has migrated up to the north, we figure this would be a safe place for blacks to host a event, Juneteenth, and keep the oldest celebration going.
So it's particularly important that this be done in East County, right?
Yes. As we have all been pushed out or necessary
migrated
to East County.
That's we figured
we figured that we should represent out there in East County and show everyone how necessary. And it's sometimes I think it's a stigma or a stereotype. Well, how we want to show how the black love look, right? And give the other people like, this is how black love reunites, right? Even we're going to have the cadets, the Gresham cadets, and that's going to be the future police. But once they get to see how black people have love and all this kind of stuff, maybe that could take some stigma out of how that blacks are not necessarily the stereotypical type that some people choose to use it.
So is this the first Juneteenth celebration out in East County?
This is the very first.
Very first one. And there have been several in the month prior to this in other locations, but this is the first one out in that area.
Yes, there was. There was just Saturday, one in Northeast Portland, where it originally started at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned this a little bit earlier about all the work that you're doing in the community. Can you talk to us a little bit more about your other activism work in detail about the youth violence prevention specifically?
So, every Tuesday night at 424 Northeast 172nd, we have a Friends of the Children building. Play, Grow, Learn is a program up under Beyond Black. So what we do is give kids skill building gyms. For instance, we play we do skill building and basketball leagues. So every kid in the community, either you are a homeless kid, a foster kid, or an underserved kid, you give a safe place to learn sports, but a skill building, right? So we're always trying to take kids. So we play a game like Who Did It, for instance. And that's showing the kids, like, if I take off my hat, everyone takes off hats. Because a lot of kids are transitioning from houses or homeless, so we're trying to give a kid a skill. If the family takes off hats, every kid should take off. That's the easy transition.
So what changes have you seen in East County in the past few years that really made you want to take on this role?
I think we've seen a lot of different changes, as well as when we get to going to City Hall. Mm-hmm. When you get welcome inside of City Hall, because City Hall can be intimidating places for those who necessarily didn't have the trust or didn't believe that they matter. So as building a relationship with Gresham City Hall, we give our community a chance to have a voice. And once you have a voice, for instance, learning that you can call someone to move the mattress from your garbage, just that simple, right? That's a big thing, because we care about our community. We care about our dumpsters overloading. So that's just helping the whole environment.
You can call somebody to have them remove a mattress from
your garbage? Of course.
Because I don't even know that. I live in West County, so
you can call Metro.
Okay, there you go. You learn something new every day.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening at Juneteenth. It's quite the celebration, yeah?
Yes. So there's going to be a kickball game. There's going to be food vendors there. There's going to be retail vendors there. We're going to have futsal tournaments.
Yes.
We're going to have
live music.
Yes, live
music.
Good. We're going to have speakers, because, of course, we need speakers to tell you what's going on in East County.
And the community will get vouchers, food vouchers, to make sure that everything is free, necessary for the community.
And where is the location in East County that this is going to be happening?
It's at 1400 Southeast 182nd Vance Park.
Great. Now, who specifically are you trying to reach with this particular event? Who would you like to see out there?
I think we would like to see everyone out there, right?
This is a celebration for everyone. Yeah, it's a celebration, but I think it's also important that we start to become the community that we want to see out in East County.
Mm-hmm. So what are you planning next for your organization beyond Juneteenth? And I mean, you obviously have a whole lot going on, but what is the next big thing that you're working towards?
Building capacity for our organization, right? We want more committees. We want the community involved, because it's going to take the village to make this organization work, right? Mm-hmm. So we're necessarily trying to get our next step is building our capacity of our community to make sure the youth and family service be very strong, because there are so many things that comes out of youth and family service, right? We got to make sure our kids are safe in schools. right? We want to make sure that we're advocating for the value of the Black community. We want our elders. So next thing, we're going to make sure we have our elders telling their story, because that's the history. Sometimes our elders are left because they're old, but we want to bring back our elders to make sure our history stays alive, right? Because the grandmother that's maybe 60 or 70 or 80 years old, we want to make them feel welcome too, because they have the history of what it is to be a prosper Black, right? If you don't make it 80, I want to make it 80. So why don't we get that person to teach how to make it 80?
So I think right. It's so important for the older generation, of, you know, to inform the younger generation. I know that Juneteenth celebrations in this area started, what, like 40 years ago? Mm-hmm. Was with Mrs. Peoples?
Yes.
She did that, exactly. And so it's really important that they understand those stories and the heritage that goes with it. So it's really a wonderful thing. Yes. So tell me, how can listeners connect with you and support the kind of work that you're doing? How do they get involved? Can they pick a specific thing they're interested in and be part of it? How do they get involved and volunteer?
So we're going to have committee signups at the event. So we hope to see everyone at this event this Wednesday from 2 to 10. You guys can hit us up by email, beyondblackcdc@gmail.com. You can also give us a call, 971-220-5337. You can hit up Jermaine Flintroy, gflintroypgl @gmail.com, or Anthony Bradley, pgl@gmail.com. So those are the ways you can hit us up for volunteering, and we have volunteering events all through the year.
And you have stuff that anybody can do. I mean, if you have any skill set whatsoever, what kinds of skills are you specifically looking for at this point to help you?
We're looking for technical skills such as grant writers. I think that will be huge. Like, grant writers always needed to articulate the work we do. So grant writers.
And get money. Yeah. That's it. Really, let's just get down to it. I mean, you know, it doesn't happen without funds, right?
Yes, 100%. We're looking for necessarily youth and family service workers, right? Because it takes on so much work to necessary to help all the youth and all the issues that's necessary to come along with them. We're looking for economic developing, because we want to learn how the necessary to plan for the future, right? We're learning how necessary we got, like, the farmer's market card is just a small part of what small businesses do, right? We want to thrive and help a lot of entrepreneurs and the people of color businesses. I think that's one of the things how you sort of get the resources.
Well, right. I was going to say, are you a resource for small businesses, you know, for businesses owned by people of color and so forth? Are you a resource for them to help them with that?
We are. We actually did last year. We did a 5-6 week business development course in partnership with MISO, and that's their specialty, is they work with entrepreneurs. So we do. Yeah.
Wonderful. All right. So we've got Juneteenth happening this Wednesday. Give me the time again.
2 to 10 p.m.
2 to 10 p.m. out at Vance Park.
Yes.
Okay. And we have food. We have music. We have sign-ups. We have all kinds of dancing and speakers and things going on.
And we're
going to
have a barbecue competition.
Well, of course you are. It wouldn't be complete, right? Because, I mean, you got to have it. It's summer,
yes.
Right? All right. So it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful celebration. Everyone is welcome.
Everyone.
We want to see you come out there and enjoy yourself and really get inspired. To help your community, right? Thanks again for coming in tonight, and we do appreciate you telling us all about this great event. If you want to know more about it, you can always contact us here at KBOO and, you know, find out all the details. If you need them, we'll try to get that up on our Facebook page and up on our website and so forth. And we have been talking again to Jermaine Flintroy of the Black Community Development Corporation and LaTosha Carter. I'm sorry.
<That's okay. laughs>
I have the old sheet in front of me here.
We do want to thank Lori Palmer of Go Get Your Child for setting up this.
Yeah, for setting up the interview.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. And again, you can find out more about their work on Facebook at Beyond Black CDC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a live in-studio interview with Jerry Chrisman and John Campbell of Portland's Tesla City Stories. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. The title of tonight's show is Keys, Beats, Bars, Music for Incarcerated Youth. Then at 7 on Hard Knock Radio, Davey D interviews former Black Panther and political prisoner Daruba Bin Wahad about the crisis in Sudan. There will be weather tonight, and it will be pleasant and cool with a low of around 59. Tomorrow, a cloudy morning, becoming sunny later with a high near 76. Today in history, in 1960, the Nez Perce tribe is awarded $4 million for 7 million acres of land undervalued at 4 cents per acre in the 1863 treaty. And it was 1972, the Watergate scandal. 5 White House operatives are arrested for breaking into the offices of the Democratic National Committee in an attempt by some members of the Republican Party to illegally wiretap the opposition. More innocent times. The quote of the day is from Harry S. Truman, who said, "This administration is going to be cussed and discussed for years to come."
From the Kill the Messenger department, Donald Trump's campaign has fired several pollsters after internal polling numbers that indicate unfavorable ratings for the president in the 2020 election were made public. Trump went on to claim that the numbers were in fact incorrect, calling them fake polls. The president took to social media to tell his supporters to ignore the polls that say he is behind.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has named a new settlement in the occupied Golan Heights region after Donald Trump to honor the president's decision to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the territory. Trump Heights will be built in a region that Israel annexed from Syria more than 50 years ago, but had never been recognized as Israeli territory prior to Trump. It's estimated that roughly 130,000 Syrians were expelled from the Golan during the annexation and have not been allowed to return since. Trump has made several moves supporting Israel, including relocating the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and cutting aid to Palestinians. In addition, his son-in-law and White House advisor Jared Kushner's peace plan doesn't call for the formation of a Palestinian state. Both the construction of Israeli settlements in the area and Trump's recognition of Israeli sovereignty over the territory have been internationally condemned.
Egypt's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi, has died after fainting in a courtroom in Cairo. Morsi was chosen as the Muslim Brotherhood's candidate for the 2012 election and secured the presidency in a narrow victory. The Muslim Brotherhood was outlawed by the country's current government, calling it a terrorist group. However, in 2013, Morsi was removed from power by a military coup and immediately arrested. The former president was facing multiple charges and was on trial for espionage when he died. Morsi had a history of health issues, including diabetes, liver, and kidney disease. He reportedly suffered from medical neglect during his imprisonment that was compounded by the poor conditions in jail. There have been various reports over the years that Morsi had been mistreated and tortured in jail, with activists saying that his death should be seen in context of the Egyptian authorities' systematic isolation and mistreatment of political detainees. Human Rights Watch called the news of Morsi's death terrible and entirely predictable, citing the government's failure to allow him adequate medical care.
How the zebra got its stripes. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water.
How the zebra got its stripes. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
It was almost 60 years ago that Rachel Carson wrote about the hazards of the pesticide DDT, and eventually it was banned in the 1970s.
Now a new study shows that there are significant traces of it still found in Canadian lake sediments near where forests were sprayed last century.
Researchers studied core samples from the bottoms of 5 remote lakes in different watersheds in New Brunswick. The samples allowed them to see chemical and biological conditions before, during, and after the pesticide's use.
In a release from Mount Allison University in New Brunswick, the scientists say that DDT and its breakdown products are still very high in modern sediments and are above the levels at which harmful effects can occur.
Between 1950 and 1970, thousands of tons of the insecticide were widely applied to eastern North American forests, often by air, to manage insects. Chemicals like DDT are very persistent and can wash into lakes from surrounding landscapes.
The lead author of the study, published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, said that yesterday's environmental crisis remains today's problem, and decades of applying the insecticide to conifer forests have left a mark on the five lakes they studied and probably many others.
Earther reports that DDT will continue to be a problem, especially for fish, and less so for amphibians, because it can be present for 750 years after its application.
As climate change brings more droughts, there are increased efforts to conserve water, but conservation has some surprising consequences.
The recent drought in California from 2012 to 2016 was the driest on record. Conservation efforts led to residents using less water inside for showers, clothes washing, and toilet flushing, and that resulted in lower flows available to push waste through sewer systems.
The Water Education Foundation reports that, as a result, a significant amount of wastewater pipes have corroded and equipment's been damaged. What's more, the low flow has left sewage stagnating. About one-fifth of wastewater agencies responding to a survey in California indicated that they had experienced increased corrosion of their collection systems.
One proposed solution to these problems is to focus conservation efforts more on outside the home rather than inside. Adam Link, the director of the California Association of Sanitation Agencies, told the foundation that indoor savings are good, but asked, at what point are you causing more harm than benefit from saving those drops of water?
A public policy group said in a report earlier this year that coordination between water suppliers and wastewater agencies needs to be improved.
In Greenland, highly unusual events occurred Wednesday and Thursday last week.
Temperatures were 40 degrees Fahrenheit above normal, and nearly 45% of the ice sheet has melted.
An estimated 2 billion tons of ice was lost. Normally, widespread melting does not occur until midsummer, if even then.
Thomas Mote of the University of Georgia told CNN that there have been spikes in Greenland ice melting before, as in 2012, but so much melting early in the summer could be a bad sign that indicates this year could set records for the total amount of ice lost. Earlier melting can make it easier for even more to happen later in the summer.
According to Mote, there is a persistent high pressure ridge that has pulled up warm, humid air from the central Atlantic.
The extent of the ice over the entire Arctic Ocean at this time of year has never been as low, and the effects of the weather there are being felt in the U.S.
The Washington Post reports that it's like someone left the refrigerator door open, sending cold air south into mid-latitudes, with much of the central and eastern part of the country experiencing lower than normal temperatures.
Global warming may lead to a shift in the time of day that thunderstorms are likely to occur.
A study looked at daily weather patterns in Western Europe, where thunderstorms usually break out in the late afternoon. The research shows that in the future, the number of storms occurring in the morning or overnight could increase.
The study, published in Geophysical Research Letters, used climate models to find if patterns would be affected by increasing greenhouse gas emissions.
Edmund Meredith, lead author, told Geospace that while they focused on Western Europe, other parts of the world may also see shifts in daily storm activity.
And finally, as a child, Alison Cobb was captivated by Rudyard Kipling's story, How the Leopard Got His Spots, that explains in a fictional way why animals look the way they do. She was particularly enchanted by zebras. Why on earth would this little horse develop stripes?
Theories have ranged from the stripes being camouflage, to repelling insects, to attracting mates, or that the pattern somehow kept the animals cool.
It's that last one that Cobb thought had potential. As an amateur naturalist, she spent time living in Africa with her zoologist husband and observed how zebras would graze in the hot sun for hours.
The two recently conducted an experiment in Kenya, measuring temperature differences between black and white stripes on two zebras.
As Science Alert explains, they found a temperature difference between the stripes as the day warmed, with the black ones oceans becoming up to 27 degrees hotter. That difference in temperature was enough to produce small currents where warm air rises and cool air sinks, keeping the animal from overheating.
Like all horses, zebras sweat to keep cool. However, the couple also realized through their experiment there was more going on, and they think they've unlocked the secret.
They observed that zebras have an unexpected ability to raise the hair on their black stripes while keeping the white ones flat, allowing them to evaporate heat away from their skin.
Cobb says it's the combination of these mechanisms that keep the animals cool, a system way more complex than we or Kipling ever imagined.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss solutions for protecting and managing aging infrastructure at WIC19. Learn more at awwa.org/water infrastructure.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A fight over land is reigniting following a recent proposal by Juneau, Alaska, as KTOO's Adeline Baxter reports.
Demonstrators gathered across from the state capitol Friday and later City Hall to protest the city and borough of Juneau's petition to annex portions of Admiralty Island. The draft petition proposes expanding Juneau's current boundaries by 1,400 square miles. It includes land surrounding Tracy Arm to the south and portions of the northern end of Admiralty Island. The Juneau Assembly approved those boundaries by a narrow vote in January 2018. Assistant City Manager Mila Cosgrove said it took the city a year and a half to get all of the application materials together. She says they're aware of Angoon's concerns, but have confidence in the process.
That's why the Local Boundary Commission exists. It's to assist neighboring areas to work out any differences of opinion about where those lines should be.
The city of Angoon has protested annexation from the beginning, calling it a land grab and saying it threatens Indigenous subsistence practices and their role as the original stewards of Admiralty Island. The Angoon City Council passed a resolution Monday, once again stating its opposition. Angoon Mayor Joshua Bowen says he doesn't understand why CBJ is moving forward with annexation when the land already has some federal protections from development. Tlingit elders from Angoon traveled to Washington, D.C. in 1978 to lobby for those protections.
The attitude here is like, why do we have to keep fighting to protect this monument?
Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins joined Friday's protest. His district includes Angoon, and he says he's working with the city to send a letter of opposition to the Local Boundary Commission. Christ Tompkins says aspects of CBJ's application, like the decision to exclude Funter Bay, where many Juneau residents own private cabins, likely won't be viewed sympathetically by the commission.
The legislature can disprove whatever the LBC puts forward, and I'll certainly be exercising that prerogative if it feels warranted.
The Local Boundary Commission will do an informal review of CBJ's petition before the final version is submitted. Once the commission completes its technical review, the petition will go to the legislature for approval. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
Frank Lemire is being remembered for his longtime work advocating for Native American issues. His family informed the public of his death on social media Sunday. Lemire was a leader in helping end liquor sales in the border town of White Clay, Nebraska, something he was involved with for 20 years. Lemire talked about White Clay in this 2017 interview on Native America Calling.
If our neighbors tell us that there's something that we do that disaffects them, that impacts them, that hurts their children, they should only have to tell us one time. That is not the case in Nebraska, and that's not the case with we as Nebraskans. You know, it impacts Lakota children, impacts a whole generations of the people.
Lemire from the Winnebago tribe was recently diagnosed with cancer. He was 69 years old. Native elders are among the thousands of athletes from across the country gathered in Albuquerque, New Mexico this week for the 2019 National Senior Games, which promote health and wellness among adults over 50. Native elder Esther Felipe received a bronze medal for the 50-meter power walk. The 89-year-old from Acoma Pueblo also carried the torch for the games. She's been running for 32 years and says being active is key in the golden years.
I maintain a big orchard. I have a garden every year, and I'm an outdoor person, and I can't just sit around and watch TV.
More than 13,000 athletes are competing in the games, which continue through June 25th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 17, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kenzie Beard and Jim Thompson. The producer is Jim Thompson, and our engineer is Danielle Parks. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Coming up on Tuesday morning on KBOO at 7, it is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Call-In Talk Radio, covering politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of listener calls. At 9 a.m. on Alternative Radio, Paul Street talks about the anti-democratic nature of the U.S. Constitution. At 10 a.m., you'll hear Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio brings the special Testimonies, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls from Native Voice One. At 11:30, Art Focus Joseph Galavan interviews Mary Weaver Chapin of the Portland Art Museum about the World's Fair in Paris of 1900. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, and we sure wish that you would, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Back in the golden age of radio, even before KBOO, in fact, even before Ira Glass, there was a short-lived though influential network called the Tesla Broadcasting Company. They did things differently than the big networks at the time, the Columbia Broadcasting Systems and the NBCs of the world. They hired the talent no one else would. They told stories the others wouldn't dare, and in ways that were more complex and unique than the norm. Founded in New York in 1943 and acquired by CBS just 2 years later, the Tesla Broadcasting Company became a mere footnote in the history of American radio. That is, until March 10, 2013, when a Portland resident by the name of Brendan Jones, no relation, received a mysterious package in the mail. The package contained a rare treasure, transcripts of the long-lost scripts from TBC's archive. Brendan felt he had an obligation to bring these scripts back to life to honor not only the Tesla Broadcasting Company, but the golden age of radio itself. So, along with his partner Jerry Chrisman, he founded Tesla City Stories. Tesla City Stories is a troupe of radio actors who perform these scripts live on stage, just as it was done 70 years ago during radio's heyday, complete with music and sound effects. And they'll be opening their fifth season on Friday, June 28th at the Old Church Concert Hall in downtown Portland. We're fortunate to have Jerry Chrisman with us now, along with Tesla City cast members John Campbell and Karen O'Brien, to tell us more. Jerry, John, and Karen, thanks for joining us live at KABU.
Sure, hello. Thanks
for
having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Jerry, Tesla City has such an amazing origin story. Did your partner, Brendan Jones, ever find out who sent those scripts and why they were sent to him?
Well, to this day, we don't know who did it. And it is an amazing story that he received those and was able to dig a little deeper and find all these amazing stories.
Can you give us an idea of what kinds of scripts were in that package?
Oh, we have everything, and we have years of material ahead of us. It's incredible. We have thrillers, we have mysteries. One of our favorite and one of our best shows is called The Wraith, similar to The Shadow. We have romantic comedies, screwball comedies, and then we also do a series of one-offs, which were only one or two episodes. And we're doing one at our season 5 premiere that is a spy thriller. So we're excited.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into it a little later. I wanted to tell people what the program was. As mentioned, you'll be entering your 5th season with the show on Friday, June 28th at the Old Church. An amazing accomplishment. So the program, let's get into that now. The season opener, spy thriller, it's a two-parter called Osprey 6, Quit Stalin.
Quit Stalin, that's correct.
It's a mouthful.
It's great. It's one of a kind, and we get to play a lot of different characters, and we have to brush up on our accents. I'm trying to learn to do a proper Russian accent.
Can you give us a taste?
A Kipton? That's all I can do. That's about it.
Don't worry. What do you learn? I got him covered.
What do you learn from Chekhov, pretty much?
That's exactly
what I heard there.
So, Karen, you'll be playing a Russian character in there?
I haven't seen the script yet, but uh-huh. I'm assuming that I will.
Can you do a Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Or? Well, of course, darling.
Oh, that's perfect.
I can do lots of Russian. I do it all the time on the podcast that I do and all that, yeah.
And oh, that's right. That, yeah, and John will ask you if you could do a Boris, I guess.
Oh, I guess I can do sort of a Boris, like this sort of Russian, yes.
Now, if only I could do Edward Horton.
Perfect.
So, yeah, which I can't. I can't even pronounce his name. Now, John, let's start with you as a cast member, and then we'll get to Karen. When did you join Tesla City Stories?
I've been with the show about 3 years, I think, coming up on that. We've gone through a couple of cycles of cast members and you know, lost a few, kept some. And, I've been with it since the relaunch at the Fremont Theater is when I first joined.
What's interesting about John is that he was originally cast as an alternate or a stand-in. And the other person couldn't fulfill it, and so John came in for him, and we are so grateful that he did. He's a tremendous cast member.
He does really awesome work.
Oh, what are some of the roles you've played?
Oh, a whole variety. I mean, in The Wraith, I play the Wraith's faithful sidekick, Bobek Koros. He is an Egyptian priest of Anubis.
Is there an accent there?
Oh, very much so. There's an Egyptian accent there, which was actually at the audition for the show. I initially auditioned for The Wraith, and they said, how about this Bobek character? I went, oh, I don't have an Egyptian accent, but being an actor, you don't say that in an audition, so you just kind of try something out, and it came out kind of like Sala from Indiana Jones, and so he has sort of this, you know, Sabi, priest of Anubis, sort of, you know.
Oh, that sounds good. And you were in the, there was the hillbilly one too, right?
I
caught that performance.
I did play the dastardly Armand Bastrop in that, which was, he was sort of an arrogant young hillbilly.
And you lost the hog calling contest, correct?
I did lose the hog calling contest to the wonderful Laura Cross, beat me for that. That was another one that was another curveball when you read a script and suddenly it just says you do a hog call and you go, oh, okay.
But you have a background in improv. I see also here theater and stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff around. I went to school for theater and I've done stand-up and all kinds of stuff. So it's this is kind of the perfect show for me, really, because it's a weird collection of skills you need to do in the show and also just be on your feet all the time, ready to pick up anything. And I've been doing voices my whole life, imitating people off of TV and stuff like that. So. When I saw this as an audition, I said, oh boy, this is the show I've kind of been waiting for.
Well, of course, the TBC, the original tapes, if they were even taped at the time, back in 1943, 44, 45, don't exist or have been lost to time.
Yeah, they're lost or destroyed.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
But still, there are tapes from that era of other radio shows. Have you gone back and done any research or listened to some of those golden age programs?
Absolutely. I mean, I had already heard a lot of them being a connoisseur of kind of oddities of pop culture. I was already kind of into some of the older stuff, like The Shadow and The Green Hornet and some of those characters. Specifically listening to them now in the context of this is what I'm doing. It's very interesting, very fun to hear.
One thing that happens to us all the time is people like, well, why would I come see radio? And we have to explain that it was performed live in the 40s. So you came and watched it, and that's what we're recreating. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it was the primary medium in America. Yes. It's hard to realize that now. Before TV came in, it was movies at the same time, but it was a ritual where a whole family would sit down in front of this huge radio set and listen to their favorite programs like Little Orphan Annie or The mm-hmm. Shadow, some of the ones John mentioned.
My father did. He lived in rural Texas, in Kearns, Texas. Every Sunday night, the whole extended family gathered around the radio, and he said he could remember drifting off to sleep staring at the vacuum tube. Glow of the radio,
because it took a while once you mm-hmm. turned it off for that glow mm-hmm. to go away.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Now and there's really something to be said for theater of the mind. It really, the special effects you can get are just tremendous because it's all happening in your mind with sound effects and voices and things like
That's one thing I love about radio, and especially those old time shows or Tesla City and the podcast you do, Karen, BS de Resistance.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. We actually were guests on your show a couple of months ago. Thank you so much for bringing us on.
Oh, no, you guys are great. I love the show. And yes, there are some Russian characters in there.
There are. It's a political
satire.
Political satire podcast. We have a song in every show. We just actually won an award at the Here Now Festival in Kansas City. We were part of the Platinum Listening Lounge.
And Phil Proctor was there, wasn't he?
Phil Proctor was there.
Probably one of the greatest audio comedians of all time of the Firesign Theater.
Oh, yeah. He was an awfully nice guy.
Well, you were there then?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was.
Oh, what was that like?
Oh, it was tremendous. Uh-huh. My cohort, Dale and I, went to the Platinum Listening Lounge, and we introduced the show, talked a little bit about it, and people, you know, listened to it. They had, you know, several podcasts going on at the same time, but they also had, oh gosh, they had Mark Twain stories being read aloud, and they had, live performances and an award show for indie audiobooks, and it's a real wide-ranging thing that encompasses all audio theater and things. But we're here to talk about Tesla City Stories.
Well, I was going to ask John, you and Karen, by listening, not only doing your own podcast, and I know, John, you do one called Panel Up.
Panel Up, yeah.
But also listening to the old-time radio shows, what have you learned about acting in Tesla City Stories? Again, it's even though you're live on stage and people can see you in the audience, most of it comes through the voice rather than any kind of gestures or physical activity on stage.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're losing some of your tactics as an actor to a certain extent. So you really have to mm-hmm. compensate for that and put it all into the voice. So suddenly every movement needs to be conveyed through the voice. Your emotions are very omnipresent. The other thing is, because we are on stage, we're also in front of microphones, so we're not projecting in the same sense that you would in a play. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely a unique experience as an actor.
And actors get to play a lot of different roles, which in a play or movie you don't.
Well, that's actually my favorite thing about the show is I get to play parts that no one would ever cast me in a million years because I don't fit the physical type, whether that be my ethnicity or my physicality or anything
or
like that.
Age.
Or age, exactly. Mm-hmm. I've played both a 12-year-old boy and an 80-year-old man in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's immense fun. And
completely convincingly.
Oh, thank you.
You look like neither, by the way.
Yeah, he's somewhere in between.
I would say closer to the 12.
than to the 80.
I mean, if I had to guess. And Karen, how about you? Obviously, you've listened to some of the old-time radio show, too, in addition to doing BS to Resistance.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I find it really freeing to be on the stage and doing all these different parts and all these different characters. And I think the audience really, really enjoys it. They really get into it. I mean, some of them come dressed up in 1940s outfits and things like that.
And Jerry, it's not just going through the play. There's other things involved, too. I mean, the sound effects and music, but you also have a musical interlude.
We do.
You have a cigarette girl. Alcohol is served. These huge bottles of very strong vodka, I've seen it.
We encourage people to visit the bar during the show.
That's right. It's definitely a variety show. We always have a period musical act, and this show, we have a new one. Their first time with us, the Newport Nightingales, and we're really excited. They're terrific. And it's pretty loose. We interact with the audience a lot, so, and we have all ages.
And you have giveaways. I actually won the bottle of vodka.
So. And it wasn't rigged. It was not rigged.
No, I felt so guilty getting up and getting it. Because before, I got to tell you this story, before the show, when I was filling out, giving my raffle ticket, you put your name on it or something like that, or anyway, you put in a box, there was a little kid there. He must have been about 12 years old or so. And he was filling out about, I don't know, 4, 5, or 6. He must have come with his family, or else he had a printing machine. So I said, man, you've got a really good chance of winning. And here I win. And he must have been looking at me. I was looking around for him. I was going to give him the vodka, but I ended up giving it to Karen.
I'm glad he didn't win the vodka as 12-year-old.
Yeah, we can't do that.
We had an alternate prize at that
time. There's laws.
Now, I'm enjoying just being here with you, but listeners can have the same experience on Saturday, June 22nd. You have a cast
June 28th.
Party.
June 28th.
I mean the cast party.
Oh, sorry, I want to talk about first. Oh, yes, meet and greet. Come chat with us. We'd love to see you.
Can you give us the details of where, when, if there's tickets? Do people just show up?
It's free to all, and the name of the place just escapes me.
I believe it's the Portland Book Pub.
I think that's correct.
I believe that's what it is. There's no tickets. Mm-hmm. We'll just be there hanging out, and you can come talk to us. And
what time is that on Saturday, the
22nd? From 7 to 11 p.m.
Okay. And you can meet the cast of Tesla City Stories. And then the next week, Friday the 28th, at the Old Church. There's the preseason cast. So it's the Rose City Book Pub, 1329 Northeast Fremont. And the Old Church is the location for Tesla City Stories, the 28th, and that's the spy thriller night where there'll be a lot of Russian accents going around. It'll be somewhat like the White House.
Oh, yes. So, it'll be a lot of fun.
If any Republicans show up, they'll feel right at home.
And if you want information, you can always just find us on our website, TeslaCityStories.com.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is there a way to... I did hear rumors that there might be a podcast, that you've actually recorded some, and there's a possible release date, not an exact date, but a kind of a ballpark figure.
That's going to come out in the fall, and we're really excited about it because it's really going to expand our audience. We get that question all the time, and we've been working on it for a while, but we finally got momentum, and we've been recording. Sam Mowry, a previous cast member and well-known voice artist.
The best voice in Portland, if not the entire country.
Right, he's been
fantastic.
Yes. He's at the Willamette Radio Workshop. He's been so generous by donating his recording studio for us, and we're just thrilled. So that's really sped things up for us, and it should come out hopefully in September.
And what's the format of the podcast? Is it just the individual... scripts that you do live on stage, but of course you record it, so the sound's a little more suited for a podcast.
Each episode, it'll be about 30 minutes. Sometimes we'll do history, sometimes we'll talk about how the scripts are discovered, and then definitely the stories. Each episode will be recorded as a podcast episode.
Will you be doing the live or the Foley effects, the sound effects?
Yes.
While you're recording, or you put those in later and add music, some post-production?
There's some post-production, but there'll definitely be live Foley sound effects. Mm-hmm. And we have a tremendous Foley artist, David, who works with us.
It's incredible what you do. So David actually does some live Foley the way they did it in the golden age of radio.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then Jerry is usually behind a MacBook.
Well hidden, yes.
Yes, but also doing some electronic, and the keyboard doing some electronics.
He's a very talented musician.
Yeah.
Well, we do digital effects, but it's accurate because back in the 40s, they would do needle drops on records. So they would have pre-recorded effects that way, in addition to, coconut halves for horse hooves.
Right. Well, there was a whole science associated with Foley in that era. One of the funniest was Sam's group, Willamette Radio Workshop, they did old-time radio comedies. And one of the ones they did, I think David Ian was the one doing the Foley for it, mm-hmm. was Fibber McGee and Molly. The running gag on that was opening up Fibber McGee's closet and right. having about 5 minutes of things just kind of tumbling out of it. And they actually did that live. It was just incredible. The last sound was kind of a coin in a metal bowl, and it just resonated for just about a minute or so. It was amazing.
Kept spinning and ringing. Yeah, I love
it. Yeah, how David managed that. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. And people
He's
love
good at
to
what
come.
He does.
Yes, he is. People love to come and watch the live Foley sound effects. It's really cool.
It is exactly like being transported back to that different era, and it's a form of entertainment that has not gone out of date by any means.
It seems to be resonating. You know, we started this
5 years. Yes,
5 years. And we started small, and it just kept growing and resonating. And it's accessible for all ages. It's been a tremendous journey, and we're going to keep it going for a long time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And each show is different. So yes. Don't think, you know, if you come see the June show, you will have already seen the July show, because it's going to be
there might not
be
any spies in July. It might be it could be the Wraith. It could be
it's going to be no spy July.
The Viola, kind of a serial, a sitcom type serial. Could be any of those, or one of the one-offs, depending what you pick out of that treasure chest from TBC.
Absolutely. Yeah,
we're lucky. We have such a trove to choose from.
We sure do.
Well, Jerry, John, and Karen, thanks so much for joining us live at KABU. We've been talking with Jerry Chrisman, co-founder and producer of Tesla City Stories, and Tesla City cast members John Campbell and Karen O'Brien. The new season, Tesla City's fifth, launches Friday, June 28th at the Old Church Concert Hall. That's located at 1422 Southwest 11th in Portland. Doors at 7 p.m., show at 8 o'clock. This is Ken Jones for KABU's News in Depth.
Meet me. Meet me on the mountain.
KABU wants you to meet us where the music's at.
You can see awesome live bands like Fruition.
That's right. KABU wants to send you to a concert this summer.
Just enter the KABU Summer Music Raffle, where three lucky winners will choose an order from three awesome events.
You could win 2 3-day passes to the Northwest String Summit, July 19th to the 21st.
A pair of Sunday tickets to Pickathon, August 4th.
A pair of tickets to Lord Huron and Shaky Graves at the Oregon Zoo, August 12th.
Tickets are just $5, and if you buy 4, you get an extra raffle chance for free.
Enter at kboo.fm/give, or you can buy tickets in person at Music Millennium or Grendel's Coffee.
Deadline to enter is July 7th. See kboo.fm/summermusicraffle for full rules and details.
Enter now for your chance to win.
Hello out there, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio, 90.7 on your FM dial, unless your FM was made in America.
Coming this Monday,
June 17th at 11 p.m.,
KABU's original bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time. We continue our presentation of
The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy by Cliff Nesteroff.
This week, the late 1950s to the early 60s, when Red Fox